Welcome, rock stars, from Rockland USA Studios in Washington, D.C. This is Rock on the Money. Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all of those hard-earned monies. We're here to give you ideas, answer your questions, keep you updated on your path to retirement and financial independence. I'm Craig, your Dave Ramsey Master Financial Coach, along with Amanda, our in-house lawyer and real estate agent, and we're so grateful you've joined us. Call or text your questions or comments 24 hours a day to 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Rock on the Money, or our website at rockonthemoney.com. How you doing, Amanda?
Oh, Craig, I am beyond fantastic. Another wonderful sunny day in Florida here.
You keep rubbing. You know, eventually it's going to warm up here in D.C.
Yeah.
The problem with D.C. now, the flowers are already coming up.
Oh, yeah.
That's not
and,
good.
And we're like in pre-spring right now, right? Or fake spring.
Fake spring. And cherry blossoms, hopefully they don't get messed up. Because that's our danger around here in the orchards and the vineyards. And you got the corona yet?
Not yet.
No?
Not yet. But I rarely leave my house, so it's going to have a hard time finding me.
Do you see a lot of people walking around with masks and stuff?
Not in my house.
Oh, good point. You went on that. You know, I'm not trying to pick on people, but please don't wear Home Depot dust masks with the logo on it. It just looks weird. And you can see it because it's orange. It's like, nah.
It's not what it's meant for. Anyway. Oh, well.
Anyway, what we got coming up in this one?
This is a very special episode today.
Really?
Yes. For the first time, we have a special guest.
Drum roll.
This is a very dear friend of mine. I went to law school with her, and her name is Sam Aboukadir, and she currently practices probate and family law in the state of Florida. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good.
She must hey, Sam, be like you really smart.
She's super smart, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and she's very patient with people. She is like a saint.
Thank you, thank you. It's an honor to be on your show. I feel very special. Thank you for having me.
You know what? You are our very first special guest.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah, you're the only one that was willing to come on.
I don't know.
No, just kidding. Good.
No. The thing is, it's like I thought this was a really important topic for our listeners, and you were the one person that immediately came to mind to talk about this subject. Do you want to share? You have your own law firm now, right?
I do. It's called the Florida Probate and Family Law Firm. About 50% of my practice is probate, guardianship, and estate planning, with a specific focus on special needs planning whenever those clients come in. And then the other 50% of my practice is family law. So divorce, child custody, domestic violence, adoption, prenups, postnups, etc.
Oh, wow. I can already see we're going to need you back on the show at some point to talk about how
especially the child custody and divorce thing. That, you know, because that gets
anytime.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you're dividing 401k assets, right, Ooh. Sam?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, today we have you on to talk about the basics of wills, trusts, and estate planning.
Great. So a significant part of my practice is estate planning. We struggle, and I think I can speak for most estate planning attorneys, we struggle to be able to explain the importance because people just see it as something, oh, I'll get it done, and they just put it on the back burner. But it's extremely important to get your estate planning in order because it gives you the control of where your assets are going to go if, God forbid, anything happens to you. And currently, the last time I looked at the statistic, over 50% of the United States does not have their estate planning in order. So that's scary. It creates more work for the attorneys, and it causes a lot of litigation with family members.
So what happens, Sam, if someone doesn't have a will, then what happens?
So in the state of Florida, if somebody doesn't have a will, they die in what's called an intestate state, which just means that they didn't have anything recorded, and it goes per Florida statute. So depending on, every case is different, so I can't tell you this is what's going to happen, but depending on who out of their family members, their lineage is left and still, you know, basically alive, we look at that and we'll be able to determine who will be able to get their assets. And if nobody, we can't find anyone, which happens a lot, believe it or not, then it goes in, you know, what's called a special account with the state, and it just sits there until someone comes and asks for it. And then after a certain amount of time, which I've never seen happen, and I used to work for the judges in Miami-Dade County, after a certain amount of time, then it is cheats to the state.
Well, that doesn't sound good. And if there's no will in place, then there's a whole court process involved, right? Whereas if there's a will, can you sometimes avoid going through court?
Correct. So whether you have a will or not, so if you don't have a will and you have assets, you're definitely going through what's called the probate process, okay? Mm-hmm. If you do have a will and everything is not properly documented and there aren't beneficiaries and, you know, a bunch of different things, you could still go through the probate process. So it's important to make sure that you tell your attorney exactly what your goals are.
That's great. Sorry, I didn't mean to take you off track. You can jump back into your explanation.
Well, I mean, that brings me to what a will is. Part of my estate planning package, I usually do it in a package because I think it's important that everyone gets the needed documents. So the first document in one of my estate planning packages is called the Last Will and Testament, which is the document that allows you to choose who will receive your assets once you pass away. That's part of it. You also get to choose who will be your personal representative or executor. It means the same thing. And that's the person who will be in charge of making sure that everything is distributed in the manner that you chose in your will. And you also get to choose, you know, just simple instructions such as, how do you want your funeral services to be? Do you want to be buried? Do you want to be cremated? Do you want, you know, to donate, for example, to a certain charity? All of these things you get to decide with your attorney, and your attorney drafts what's called the Last Will and Testament. So that's super important. The next document is what's called the Durable Power of Attorney. You can have a non-durable, so it can just be a normal power of attorney, or you can have a durable power of attorney. The difference is if it's durable, that means that if you become incapacitated, which means that you're not able to make financial decisions or health decisions on your behalf, because let's say you get in a car accident, then the
power. But not just a normal car accident, right?
Like a real big one.
Yeah.
One that kills you.
You're in a coma.
Not just that you broke your arm.
Okay.
Correct. So you have to be incapacitated. You can't make decisions on your own behalf. You're in a coma. Let's use that as an example. Then the power of attorney, if it's durable, if it has the durable language per Florida statute, then it continues to run past your incapacity. And that's huge, because then that means that your family doesn't have to go to court and establish what's called a guardianship to continue paying bills or doing anything financial.
Right.
Okay. So going back, a power of attorney is the document that allows you to choose during life. It only works during life, not once you pass away, who gets to make financial decisions on your behalf. So you choose an agent to be able to make those decisions. And you don't have to be incapacitated to have a power of attorney. You can be traveling and give somebody the power to make financial decisions on your behalf.
Yeah, and I tell you, my husband went to Kuwait for a year, and I had powers of attorney to handle all of his affairs because, something could happen. And I guess something could happen any day, but especially in a war zone. And two, you know, the time difference is just so, so big that normal banking hours was like the middle of his night. So,
correct. That's a perfect example. When people are deployed, or they live in a foreign country for a certain amount of time, they're going to school, anything like that. Mm-hmm. That's when a power of attorney comes into play, and it's significantly cheaper than having to have your family go to court to be able to do these things.
Right, right. So if people are thinking, oh, no, I don't need one, or I don't want to pay a lawyer to prepare one because it's too costly, the costs associated with court are just astronomically more expensive.
Correct. And it actually is one of the first questions that I ask in our estate planning consultations. Do you care if your family's going to spend money? Would you rather spend less money now so that you can prevent your family from spending money in the future, or do you not really care? And then on that answer, I can better, you know, navigate.
Amanda, that sounds like a Roth. I'm locking in now, paying now, and it's going to be free later.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go.
There you go. Good analogy.
Yeah.
I try.
The next document that I always discuss with my potential new clients is what's called a healthcare designation. And that is the document that if you're incapacitated, or if you're not capable of making healthcare decisions for yourself, so it's during life, then you're basically choosing who's going to make those healthcare decisions on your behalf.
You mean like pull the plug?
No, that's another document that's next. But great guess. Great guess. if you're in a coma after a car accident and the doctor has a decision as to whether they can perform surgery or not, and it could be a surgery that's not necessary but could, you know, help you, they'll go to the family and they'll ask, do we have permission to have this surgery? Let's say you have children from a prior marriage and then you have your wife, and the wife is not obviously the children's mother. The children might say, no, we don't want dad to get surgery, but then the wife might say, yes, I do want him to get surgery. And that's where you would have to go to court. And these things are so time sensitive because you're talking about a surgery that could potentially keep him alive or, you know, be beneficial during a certain time frame, that instead of going to court, if you have this document, that's all you need.
Yeah.
That's do you important. Really run into those situations? I mean, do you get involved with that in courts, or Absolutely. Do you just prepare the documents?
So no, I do both. So I do litigation as well in this area. So I always get, and I
Yeah, Sam's a rock star.
I bet you have some stories about situations that.
Yeah, we have some very interesting stories here in South Florida.
I was just like gonna say, especially in Miami-Dade, for sure.
Yeah, I'll compare my fire station stories to your legal stories. That'd be a fun evening.
It would be a fun conversation because it would be who can outdo whose story.
Yeah. Mm. Outdo the crazy.
Yep. Going back, that's the next document. And then we also have what's called the living will, which is exactly what you said. That's the document which allows you during life to choose whether you want to be kept on life support or not, and under what circumstances you would want to be kept under life support. And you get to choose that now so that your family members don't have to fight later, or your family members don't have the burden of having to decide that.
Mm. You got to choose wisely on that one. I mean, I'm not sure I can trust everybody on Facebook with that.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. There's one other document that we sometimes prepare, depending on if you have minor children. Sometimes we put this language in the will. It depends on the situation and the family. But there's a document called a pre-need guardian form. So when you have minor children and, you know, parents are always telling me, you know, I'm worried if anything happens to us, can we choose who the kids go to, etc. So that's also a document that we discuss where we say, you know, who would be the first in command if anything were to happen to both husband and wife. Sometimes they split it up and they say, well, I want my husband's parents to be in charge of the finances and I want my parents to be in charge of their health care. So I want them to reside with my parents, but I want his parents to decide the finances.
Man, and you almost can do that. That almost sounds like a child plan during a divorce where you kind of designate different responsibilities.
Correct. Hmm. And that's totally doable. And then the other document, which is not for everyone, is what's called a trust. And the trust is when you have assets that you want to make sure. Trust can be done in multiple ways, but when we usually do them, it's a revocable trust, and it usually depends on what your assets are, and this is the one way that you can avoid going to court. It's more expensive, but it is the one way that you can avoid going to court. There is another way. If you have assets and you designate beneficiaries, but certain assets, then you wouldn't necessarily need a trust that way. But most clients come and they tell me, you know, I have a few properties, I have a few retirement accounts, I have some bank accounts, I have, you know, all sorts of things, cars, boat, whatever. Then we start discussing whether a trust is the right avenue for them. And the trust is really controlling the assets post-death. So I laugh about it because I'm like, do you want to keep controlling from under the ground? Because this is exactly what it is. So you can, for example, you don't want to give your kid everything at 18, right?
Yeah.
You pass away. Then this is a great tool to ensure that they don't blow through the money at 18. You can put in that trust, I want my kid to get the first third at this age at 25, the next third at 30, and the last third at 35, for example. And these are great ways to continue controlling post-death.
Oh, I kind of like that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this the one where the paper owns everything, where the trust actually owns like the car and you change the deeds and stuff? Okay.
Correct.
Gotcha. Correct.
You retitle items once the trust is established, and you retitle it for the trust to either have ownership or have a beneficiary designation.
And that's called funding the trust, right, Sam?
Correct.
How long does that take? That sounds pretty involved.
Well, I think that's why she said it's a bit more expensive.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah. So the first step is always establishing the estate planning, executing, and having it in place. And it's almost as if it's a holding tool, right? It's right. Paperwork. And I always tell the clients, think of the trust like a bank account that holds all assets, yep. Right? And then that's where, you know, once we start putting things in this holding account, if anything happens once you die, then that's when the trust comes into play.
So what's all the benefits of having a trust? Does it protect from like divorce and all kinds of family issues like aunts, uncles and stuff? Or
it does, but it depends on the situation and the circumstances.
You're so, like Amanda, that word depends keeps popping up. You both are lawyers, that's for sure.
Yep.
There you go. No, it honestly does, though. I know it sucks to say it depends to every mm-hmm. question, but it really does. Everyone's family and situation is different. So to answer part of your question, if you're going through a divorce and your parents left you trust funds, the spouse will most likely not be able to touch those trust funds unless you are supported through those trust funds during the marriage and the spouse relied on those trust funds.
Mm.
So there's all sorts of, you know, if this happens, then this happens. But right. If you keep things separate, you're not, you know, likely that they're not going to be able to touch it in a divorce.
So that's why people need a really smart probate and estate planning lawyer like you to help run through those scenarios for their particular situation.
Yeah, I mean, I always encourage people, just have a consultation. You know, most attorneys, I shouldn't say most, some attorneys do consultations for free, and it's not going to hurt you to get free information.
Right.
Is there, okay, so if I'm going out there shopping for an attorney to do all this, right, what are the cautionary things I need to look out for? Is it like a financial advisor? I really need to be careful. I mean, are there some key things that I know I have a good one as opposed to a bad attorney? I mean, are they going to sell me things I need, I don't need? You know what I mean? Stacking products and services.
I always think about it this way. If I were to go out and hire an attorney, which I have, I always ask them certain questions, and if I feel that I'm comfortable with our relationship and I feel like they have the knowledge that I require for whatever I'm hiring them for, then that's enough for me. I would not, for example, if they're not able to answer certain questions or they don't know the answers to those questions, that would be a red flag for me. But again, this is for me. Everyone's different.
Yeah.
I always look up, you know, their website. I look up sometimes the reviews. I read things, I see what they're involved in, and then I make my decision based off of that.
You know what's a red flag for me is if you go to an attorney and you ask them a question and they don't ask you more questions to find out. You know, they should be able to say, if you don't get the it depends answer from them, that's probably not a good attorney, because if they're okay. just saying, no, you should do this, this, and this without really understanding your situation and asking clarifying questions, then they're making a lot of assumptions that may not or may not apply to you.
Gotcha.
Correct. There could be attorneys that are, you know, I mean, we have this in all different fields. I shouldn't just yep. say attorneys, but there could be attorneys that are having you spend more money on things that you don't necessarily need. So when I say not everyone needs a certain package, not all of my clients need a trust. That's why I ask from the get-go the basic questions for me to know whether they really need to spend the money or not. Because if not, it's no benefit to them.
What website were you talking about to get reviews on lawyers? Where would I find that?
So there's a couple. We have Google reviews based okay. on their firm, but that is not necessarily always 100% reliable because you can work for a firm where there's multiple attorneys.
Right.
And then you also have something called AVO, what? AVVO.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's also a way that you can read reviews, you can read information about the attorney, but more importantly, I look at the website.
Yep.
And the website gives you the information of what type of areas the attorney practices in, who's in their office, what things they've maybe published, mm-hmm. what associations they're involved in. And I really think that certain clients are not a good fit for certain attorneys.
Right, yep.
So
You know what that reminds me of, Sam, is what was that show sometime where someone walked into his attorney's office and it was like jeans day and he's like, no, I need an attorney in a suit every day.
I saw that.
Some people are totally cool with like a casual and they actually would vibe better with someone who's a little bit more casual and laid back and not as intimidating, you know, so it's totally a personal preference.
Exactly.
If I go to a lawyer's website and it's all like just pictures of them standing in front of brown law books, I know immediately that's not my lawyer. Yeah. My lawyer is going to have a colorful, modern, like sleek website that tells me that, no, they're more modern in their approach.
Same.
Yep.
Hey, going back to the will thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these things on the website. If you Google make a will, there's like Will Maker, LegalZoom. I mean, all these crazy things out there. What are your thoughts on all these third party do it yourself? I know every state's different, but what's your thoughts on that as compared to going to a professional?
I'm so glad you asked that because I totally forgot to mention those things. So I would say on average, I have at least 1 to 2 clients, I would say per month, that come to me with a will from a family member who was drafted from Office Depot or LegalZoom or everything you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I have quite a few right now that are in litigation because the will did not comply with Florida law.
Right.
So I always encourage people, you can Google anything and you can do anything yourself. But why spend so little now and then later on your family members are going to have to suffer and pay thousands of dollars and you might not even have the people that you intended to receive because of this mistake. So to me, it's not worth it. If you really want your assets to be given to a certain person and if you want things to be done a certain way, spend a little bit of extra money and do it the right way.
Yeah, and something like the so important, the state differences, because even in like I know in Florida, it's super crazy. You have to have like a certain number of people sign it physically in front of them. Like they can't even be, you know, looking out the window. You have to be staring at them while they're signing it. Right, Sam?
Correct, because there are certain requirements under Florida law.
Yeah. So, and so if you don't do it exactly the right signature order with exactly the right type of people witnessing it, then your whole will can get tossed out.
Correct.
I did hear on a radio show, Florida, California, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if you know, but I think Texas is, there's certain states that have these crazy requirements like you're talking about.
Well, and so there's kind of a history, you probably know, Florida has a very large elderly population.
I've heard that, yeah. Especially Fort Myers, and the people that are listening know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so a lot of the Florida laws were drafted with the intention to protect seniors from, you know, scams and frauds and people like just getting them to sign, you know, a will that they drafted.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a fellow for the Real Property Probate and Trust Law Society of the Florida Bar. And part of our job is looking at different Florida statutes and making sure that they are protecting the people that we intend to protect and that people aren't taking advantage of the elderly. And a huge thing that we've been, you know, doing for years is researching the exploitation statute because we've seen that lately, I shouldn't say lately, but we're starting to see it more often than not, that, you know, the elderly community is suffering because people are going online, printing these things and having them sign when they're incapacitated, and that's not okay.
Right.
I have one last question. We're going to take a break here in a minute, but is there services available for those that are low income that don't have the ability to pay for this, or elderly, or people that don't speak English, or is there special services available for these individuals?
Absolutely. So their legal aid in Miami-Dade County has a program for people who need low bono services or pro bono services. But even if a client calls me and tells me, you know, I'm limited in funds, you know, I can tell you how much I make, this is my job, or I'm retired, I only receive Social Security funds, that will never stop us from helping them. So money is not a huge issue, as you know, as long as they're being honest and they're telling us this is what I want and this is, you know, pretty much my intention, we're fine with that.
That's pretty awesome.
You're
going
to find out if they're telling the truth or not.
Correct.
Because they have to list their accounts.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. I think we have a bunch of questions, don't we, Amanda?
We've got a handful of questions, yep.
And that, we'll that may lead us to more information, more, too. So.
Might.
All right, we'll be right back. Craig and Amanda and Sam.
Boring people.
Let me write down. Amanda was right again.
You should probably continue to write that on repeat.
Okay. Enough?
I wish enough. You got that on recording, right, Craig?
Welcome back, everybody, to Rock on the Money. Craig and Amanda and our special guest, Sam. Don't forget, you can visit our website, rockonthemoney.com. On Facebook and Instagram, it's Rock on the Money. We have a very active Facebook group helping each other out. Shout out to them. Don't forget, we're giving away a gift card at the end of March. If you leave a financial voicemail question, and we use it on the show at 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Random drawing for a gift card.
Yeah, what's your website, Sam? Why don't we go ahead and share that, since so everyone can see a good example of a lawyer's website.
Oh, now the pressure's
you.
On.
Thank you. So it's the Florida Probate and Family Law Firm, and it's www.floridaprobateandfamilylaw.com, and our phone number is 305-677-5119, and we help anyone in the state of Florida.
Wow. Nice.
So, Craig, you'll put that in the show notes for everyone,
absolutely.
Right?
I will take care of Sam. Not a problem. You.
It's because Sam takes care of everyone else.
That was really neat that she helps out everybody. I mean, she's good people.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a question for you. Came in.
Well, we have a follow-up. This came up on one or two shows ago, Craig. We had a caller call in with a question. She has $20,000 for her grandchildren and wants to know what kind of investment she could put it in. And like my spidey sense were tingling that this sounded like a trust type solution. But it's totally out of my wheelhouse and I didn't want to give the wrong answer. So do you have any thoughts, Sam?
I do. So, again, it depends on what other assets she has. If this is the only asset that she has, she doesn't own property, you know, there's not very much, and she just wants to leave $20,000, I would actually tell her that she doesn't need a trust, and instead she should leave that money in a bank account that, you know, generates some sort of interest income, and then she's able to designate beneficiary designations on that bank account. So it would actually be, I would think, more beneficial for her with this amount of money, because it's, although it might be significant to her, she's going to spend, you know, at least a little bit of that having to, you know, draft the trust. So I would tell her the easiest solution is just designating beneficiary designations on a bank account.
Perfect. And so she could also do an investment account with a brokerage and do the same thing then. Yep.
The same thing.
And now's a great time to buy.
Yes. We have a
fire sale on stocks today.
Mm. Yes, we do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Craig, do you want to ask the next question?
Yes. Carrie from Virginia would like to know, at what point is it recommended that one set up a trust during the baby steps process?
So I might actually rephrase this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sam out a bit, because baby steps is really like a Dave Ramsey process that people use to help get themselves out of debt and solid financial footing. So I think the question, so it sounds like actually Sam might have already given us an answer on this, is that a trust may not be for everyone, right?
Right.
and it's probably not in everyone's steps. So it sounds like it's pretty fact specific on whether one might even be applicable.
Correct. So I would actually go further to state that if you're in debt and you don't really have assets that are, you know, in your name now, I would say you probably don't need a trust at this point in your life. However, you still need all of your estate planning, the other estate planning we've discussed, the will, the DPOA, the living will, the healthcare surrogate, all of that needs to be established like yesterday, whether you Absolutely. Have assets or not.
Yeah. So we hear that a lot. People say, well, I don't have any money, so I don't need a will because I have nothing to give away. Do you hear that sometimes?
Oh. I hear it all the time. And then I sit down with them and then we magically find assets that they didn't realize they had.
Especially if you have kids. Kids and stuff. You got to do your paperwork.
What are some examples of magic assets that appear?
I mean, like, there, you don't know how many times. So once a client retains, we have what I call their homework that we send to them via email and sometimes in the mail, depending on their age, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then we have them fill out this paperwork about everything we've discussed. And then I compare the notes from the consultation to what they put on the paperwork, and it's completely different. It's like they magically found a boat. They magically found three bank accounts. And I'm like, what? And then I pick up the phone and I'm like, Sally, where was this during our consultation? And then they'll start laughing and they're like, Sam, I totally forgot. I spoke to my spouse and I realized we bought this 20 years ago.
Oh,
and I'm
goodness.
Like, okay, well, good to know.
Sam, I just want you to know when you do financial coaching like I do, same thing happens. They say they're not in debt. Then magically we find out they have a boat debt. They have a camper debt. Debts just show up magically. But you have to get it out of them. It's like, because I also send the same type of homework. I need them to fill that before I even talk to them. Otherwise, a lot of times I'm wasting my time. So, but I totally relate to what the will and all that stuff's immediately. Usually, if you have debts, we don't want them paying for a trust. They got to pay off their debts before even we're going to spend a couple thousand on a trust.
Right. So that leads into another question here.
That's what I was leading into. You talking about Heather?
Yeah, Heather.
Yes. Go ahead. Read it.
Oh, okay. Heather asks, how much can we expect to spend depending on our circumstances and what is too much? So I'm guessing this relates to the pricing for preparing the package that you had mentioned.
Correct. So this is funny because even before I get information from a client, the first question they'll ask is, how much is this going to cost me?
Well, of course.
It's like, I hate to break it to you, but it's like going to the doctor, right? We don't know until we actually do the tests and, you know, the blood tests and the x-rays. And it's the same theory. It's the same story. We've got to do the same thing. So I've got to sit down, discuss what you have, and then I'll give you different options and different price plans. But I can give you a range because people are always curious. It could be, you know, as little as $1,000, and it can range, you know, over $5,000. It just all depends.
And that's for the full package, though, right, Sam?
Yeah, so the $1,000 is usually without the trust, depending on what they need.
Right.
And then the $5,000 and above is definitely when they need a trust and they have, you know, multiple properties, for example. That's the price point we're at.
Right. But when I say the full package, I mean everything that you mentioned, the power of attorney. Except for a trust. So,
correct.
So, Heather, is this based on an hourly rate it's going to take to get the house and everything into the trust? Is that how it comes out?
Yes,
the pricing?
And no.
Okay.
Yes and no. So to actually draft and execute, I actually work on a flat fee retainer.
So
to get the drafting done, it's a set price. It's not whether it takes us 2 hours or 20 hours, you're not paying a penny over what we've agreed to. But then once the trust is established, the funding is done hourly.
Now, so what if I get new cars and stuff like 5 years down the road, or I move to a new house or I buy another house for a rental property?
Or another boat.
Another boat.
So that's a great question. So with estate planning clients, they're clients for life. That's the beauty of it, usually.
And after death.
Yes.
There you go.
That's so beautiful.
What we usually do is we send out a letter every year or 2 years just saying, hey, Sally, it's that time again. Please let us know if we need to review the estate planning that we executed a couple years ago, and let us know if you've acquired assets or you've gotten rid of assets. And then at that point, you know, I have a conversation with them either on the phone or in person, and we reevaluate to see if anything needs to change. And if we need to change the will, there's always something called a codicil. And if we need to change the trust, then we just amend certain provisions. So you don't have to redo everything. We just have to do, you know, a one pager or two pager saying, I want to change my executor from my husband because he might have passed to my oldest child, for example. and that's an easy fix.
So,
and
then but that just, costs money,
just
right?
To clarify, so the codicil is just a fancy word for amendment, right?
Oh, correct. Thank you, Amanda. Yes. I have no idea what that was.
Yeah.
Sorry, I shouldn't use the fancy lingo. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No, you're fine.
So does that codicil, that amendment, cost money every time I do these updates?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
But you're looking at the hourly rate, and usually when we're amending any of the estate planning, it's not, you're talking about probably somewhere between the $250 to $500 in total every 2 years.
Yeah. Okay. So it's right in line with like getting your taxes prepared every year. It's just correct. One of those things that you do once a year and you budget it in as an annual expense.
Correct.
Okay. I have another question from Jennifer. If you have no dependents and have mostly accounts with beneficiaries, should you put those assets like a home in a trust to avoid probate?
So when you have property, it's usually recommended that you do put the property in a trust. When it's your homestead, and not every state has the homestead exemption, when it's your homestead in Florida, I always evaluate, depending on the client and the family, whether they should immediately put the homestead in a trust now or whether they should do it down the line.
Gotcha.
If it's not a homestead, you absolutely, I almost always recommend that it needs to be placed in their trust. And I actually go a step further and I talk to them about business planning. So if they have multiple rental properties, then I tell them, you know, we need to look into different asset protection scenarios. So sometimes we'll look at putting things in an LLC and then putting the LLC in the trust. You know, there's just different ways of doing it just to make sure that they're protected.
Mm-hmm. So if you still owe on your house, you still have a debt on the house, do you still give the same answer, Sam?
Yes, because I think what you're referring to is if you have a debt or a mortgage, if you transfer ownership, then the bank can foreclose on you and ask for the entire amount.
That's right. It's called an acceleration clause.
Ouch.
There you go.
That would suck.
It would, but this is one of the only ways that the bank will allow it. So that will not accelerate it. But what I always tell my clients is before we transfer anything, you get me a letter in writing from the bank saying that this is okay, and it's never not happened. The bank understands that there's no transfer of ownership. It's still you. It's just in, you know, a different entity's name, but it's still you.
Okay.
All right. From Teresa, this is a good lawyer question. What are the legal risks and responsibilities for a fiduciary trustee and for an executor?
So there are many. The responsibilities, so when we say trustee or executor, each one has different responsibilities per Florida statute, right? But the gist of it, just to make it easier on everyone, is you are the person who is responsible financially to make sure that everything that was stated in the trust or in the will is abided by. So the decedent, the person who passed, left you in charge because they obviously trusted you, or you tricked them, right? That's what litigation is for. But, you know, most times it's because they trusted you. Okay. So they trust you that after they've passed, that you're going to ensure that whatever their wishes are come true. So your responsibilities are not only to the decedent, but they're also to the court. Because the court, when you go to court and you open up a probate, the court is also going to hold you to those responsibilities. So you are not able to do anything without court authority in Miami-Dade County, pretty much anything. I shouldn't say everything. But, you know, the court supervises you and then the heirs supervise you. So
yeah, I bet they do.
Yeah. So there's, you know, it's very hard to go against what the decedent wants you to do, but that's exactly why we have litigation, because it's still possible and it happens.
Are there any fees for the person who is the executor or trustee? Does it cost them any money at all, or is it mostly just a time commitment?
Great question. So there are fees. They're the ones that are responsible for hiring the probate attorney to be able to administer the estate. And they would most likely, depending on the situation, they either pay the attorney up front for the initial retainer or the costs, initial retainer for fees and costs, or if the attorney sees that there are cash assets, then they can also negotiate with the attorney to tell them, hey, you can get your fees from the estate. Please don't take it from me, but take it from the estate later on. And it's an attorney decision whether they want to go that route.
Mm, gotcha.
And... sorry, I forgot one big part. Per Florida statute, the PR, the personal representative slash executor, also can receive a 3% fee for all of their work.
Oh, so there's actually some offsetting for their time commitment.
Yep, there's compensation, and it's per Florida statute, and they can even go above 3% if it's extraordinary work. Mm.
If anybody would like to put me as their executor, I'm available. I'll do the 3% minimum. I'm in. I'm for hire. That's a good retirement gig.
Side gig. Yep. And Craig, your new side gig is you're the executor of everyone's estates.
Yeah, I got free time. Hey, I got one more from Beth. I like this one. Beth would like to know, are there any tax benefits to a trust?
Absolutely, but it depends on the type of trust you're getting done. Hmm. So,
okay.
She worked in the it depends a little differently.
I caught that. Yeah.
So, depending on the type of client and how much they have in assets, that's how we determine whether there's going to be a tax benefit or not. So, the majority of my clients want a revocable trust, which means that you can edit, you can amend, you can revoke it. You can act like it didn't even exist, right? Mm-hmm. But with irrevocable trusts, I think that's what Beth is referencing. With irrevocable trusts, there are tax benefits, and they come into play to avoid the estate tax, which the threshold right now, if I'm not mistaken, is $11.4 million per individual. And if you're married, it's $22.8
million. Whoa.
So the majority of clients are not in that range. The majority of my clients are not in that range. So it wouldn't necessarily be a tax benefit to them at this point in their life.
I gotcha.
Okay. Be way beyond the baby steps at that point. Correct?
Yeah. They only shouldn't be listening to Dave Ramsey. I don't know who they listen to at that point. Here's a question though. So if you have a 401k and all that stuff, does that go into a trust?
So remember how I was referencing beneficiary designations a little bit ago?
Right.
So what happens is if this is what the client wants, put the trustee as a beneficiary or as a contingent beneficiary, depending on the situation. So is it in the trust during life? Probably not. It just depends. Is it in the trust after they pass? Probably, if it passes to the contingent or the primary, depending on if you want it to go to the trust first or second. Yes.
I was just trying to work out a tax scheme here, but it sounds like if you're getting money from it, eventually, you're going to have to pay tax unless it was a Roth or something. So
there you go.
Oh, well.
The tax man always comes knocking.
My brain was working there, but it's not going to work out.
And then I complicated it for you. I'm sorry.
No. I was just looking for the yes, and it wasn't there. So.
Well, I think we ran through our questions here. I don't have any more questions. Craig, do you?
No, that was amazing, Sam. I really, we do need to get her back, though, if she's willing.
Yes.
I like the divorce thing and the child and all that, because a lot of money issues do come from those.
Yeah.
And that would be really good.
Yep. And I guess just to say this, it's also really important that if you are going through a divorce or any sort of child custody issues, that you do have your estate planning in order and that you fix it after this process is over, because you also don't want to leave your spouse as the beneficiary of anything after you get divorced. And people don't think about that. Mm-hmm. So it's important to revisit these issues if you are going through, a marital law issue.
Yeah, so that's important, because I think there's also a lot of people that I've talked to that say, oh, no, I did a will. I'm good. I don't need to get one done. But it was like 10, 15 years ago. And, things change.
Correct.
So it's not just a one and done. You do have to revisit.
Mm. Exactly.
I just thought about something. So if somebody moves, they retire, they did a will, did everything. Let's say I live in Maryland, which I do. And then I moved. I retired to Florida. Mm-hmm. Do I need to change my will and all that because now I'm in a different state, because it will be executed in another jurisdiction?
So the will in the other jurisdiction, to the best of my knowledge, is still valid. However, if you're planning on staying somewhere, I always tell people, go in and see an attorney in the state that you now reside in. Make sure that everything complies and that there are no issues, and then go from there.
What? So is it filed in the state you created all this? Is
wills
that how that works?
Or,
oh, okay.
Yeah, wills aren't filed.
No, yep. I mean
so
the trust.
Confidential.
I was thinking about more of the trust and the other stuff.
So nothing is filed. Everything is confidential. So as soon as you execute it, it's between you and your attorney. And your attorney usually tells you where to store it, how to store it, where, you know, who to contact if anything happens to you. But it does not get filed with any entity. It doesn't get filed with the court, nothing like that.
What do you recommend to families when someone deceases? What's the I'm trying to be clean here. Remember, I was a paramedic, so yeah, I don't know.
You can say died, Craig.
Stock market has been wearing me out lately. So what's the notification process that you recommend when someone dies?
So I always tell clients, depending on their family situation, you know, tell either your attorney, your accountant, your brother, your sister, whoever you trust, where you've left things, or leave some sort of letter instructing them if anything happens to you. You know, you got to tell one person, at least one person, mm-hmm. what to do if anything happens to you, and, you know, where to find things. Because if you keep everything to yourself, it's no good.
Yeah. So if it's in a secret safe deposit box at some Swiss bank, then it's really not doing anyone any good.
Or in some book on page 32, and it's in the shelf and hidden away.
Yeah. But I always tell them to keep it somewhere that's fire and waterproof. Mm-hmm. So if they have a safe at home, that's always an idea. But then also remember that you need somebody to have the code. Or you can leave it at a safe deposit box in the bank. And you simply, you know, just make sure somebody knows that that exists. And then you just need a court order to get into it. But then that's fine.
Yeah. So, Sam, you mentioned something earlier that I think is really important for those who are like in the military community and change their resident state of residence on a regular basis. So that should be something that is revisited each time they move to a different state then, right?
Yes and no. If they have an intention, if their residence is going to stay for the military community, there's certain laws. But basically what they say is that if you're just being deployed for a certain amount of time, your residence stays as your last known residence. And if you have an intention to return, then that's where, you know, your home state is going to be.
Great. Yeah, that's really helpful because I think that the questions come up with people who, you know, spend 3 years in Italy, for example, like what happens then?
Correct. So I always tell them, you know, wherever you intend on returning, that should be your home state. And those are things you should look at. You can also visit an attorney in the country in Italy, for example, where you're at, just in case of emergency, you know, if you need to update anything. But really, if your home state is going to be Florida, for example, and you have your estate planning in order, that's pretty sufficient.
So I have one last question, and you may or may not have had experience with this. So a lot of military members go to their local JAG office to have their wills prepared. Mm-hmm. Have you had experience with someone bringing one in that needed either fixes or you thought didn't quite meet the statute?
So I've never had this happen, but I've had several clients that are deployed reach out to me. So recently I had somebody in Germany reach out to me about a family law issue. Mm-hmm. And they had an agreement in place, but they wanted me to review the agreement. Their spouse was here in Florida and they were deployed and living in Germany for, I want to say, 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I had those issues come up. And again, it would be under Florida law. So we can open it in Florida. You know, we can, you know, comply with whatever Florida says, and notice is not an issue because we know exactly where they are.
Got it.
Well, this was amazing, Sam.
Yes.
Seriously. Thank you. This was really good. I think there's so much information in this podcast. I need to go back and listen to it several times.
Thank you so much. I really hope I helped.
Where can we find you, by the way? Repeat all your contact information, your website.
Yeah, if you got social media you want people to follow, now's the time.
Oh, Sam, I do have a question. I have one last question.
Oh, boy.
I think Amanda might have been the last person on the planet, especially a lawyer, on Instagram. Are you on Instagram?
Of course I am. Oh. So I'm going to repeat all my information.
Go ahead. Go for it. Sorry.
No, don't worry. It's the Florida Probate and Family Law Firm. We're located in Coral Gables, Florida. Our phone number is 305-677-5119. On Facebook, you can find us by just looking up the Florida Probate and Family Law Firm. On Instagram, you can find us at Florida Probate and Family Law Firm. And I've already given you my phone number. I don't think we're on any other social media sites. So yeah, you can reach us on Facebook, Instagram, or you can call into the office and we'd be happy to talk to you.
That is so awesome.
And Sam, actually, I think she might follow me on Instagram. I'm not sure.
I do.
You're her second follower.
Of course I do.
There She's one go. Of the three I have, I the guess.
Well, thank you very much, Sam, for joining us. That's great.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.
That was awesome. And as always, a quick reminder, check out our website, rockonthemoney.com. We have show notes. All the podcasts are located right there. The website turns into a player. You can play it right on your phone. Plus, there's links there so you can subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platforms, including Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and TuneIn. And if you could leave us a review and some star ratings on those platforms, it really, really helps us out a lot. Check out our Facebook group community with over 3,000 people in there. Facebook.com/groups/your401k. And also check out our Facebook page at Rock on the Money. So long, everybody. We really, really do have a lot of gratitude for you listening, sharing, and spreading the word. You guys are great. Amanda and I cannot emphasize how much we appreciate you guys. So long, and we'll see you again next week. Until next time, America. America's Rockland, USA. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.